Maseches Brachos, Perek Tes, Mishneh Hey, 9-5, the last Mishnah of the Masechta. This actually is a composite Mishnah that discusses a number of different topics. The first is a continuation of our previous theme in the Perek, which is making blessings of Shevach V'Hodah, thanking Hashem, with the Brachos of Atova Meitiv, or Shechiano, when good things happen, or good tidings, and Dina Emes, when bad things happen. So the Mishnah says, Chayv Adam Levarech Al Hara, Kishem Shumavarech Al Tova. The way in which one makes a blessing over a bad thing, making the bracha Dina Emes, he should make that with the same sincerity and love of Hashem, and actually, you know, Simcha Shal Mitzah and Lev Tov, of wholeness, sincerity of heart, fullness of heart, as he would when he makes a bracha Ava Tova, Meitiv, and Shechiano. Now, the Mishnah is going to bring a proof text to show why this is the case. The proof text comes from the well-known pasuk from Kriyat Shema, which is Shene'emar ve'ahavta es Hashem Elokecha b'chol olavavecha v'chol nafshecha v'chol me'odecha, which means, and you will love Hashem, your God, with all of your heart, v'chol nafshecha is all of your soul, v'chol me'odecha, all of your resources. We will darshan the last of the three things, me'odecha v'chol me'odecha, to be a reference to be a proof text to support this idea of Mevarchen al ha-ra, Kashem Shem Mevarch al ha-tova. But before we do, since we're introducing this pasuk, the Mishnah will go off topic to make a more complete set of drashas on the pasuk, dealing with all three. So the Mishnah will go and make a drasha on the first of the three elements with which one should be Ohev Hashem. Again, this has nothing to do with our topic in the Mishnah. It's like a side point, but since we brought up the pasuk, the Mishnah says, "B'chol levavacha," you have to love Hashem with all of your heart. Now, the word "heart" in Hebrew is "lev," and therefore the way of saying your heart should be "libecha." But instead, there's "levavacha" with two bases included there, and therefore we're going to darshan as if they're two different hearts. B'shnei yitzarecha, the heart in Jewish thought is considered to be the seat of one's emotional drives. I would often translate lev as mind, but here we're darshing, so to speak, you have two minds, you're a person of two minds or of two drives, both the beyetzer hatov and uveyetzer ra. You have a drive toward goodness, towards Hashem, that's what tov is, nitzchis, eternity, and a separate drive you have towards ra, towards evil or distancing oneself from Hashem or temporariness, ephemeral things of this world, the Yitzhara. So a person should channel both of those drives that are pulling him towards Avodas Hashem. There, how you serve Hashem with your Yitzhara is subject to a bit of a machlokas between different mafarshim, but the gist is either there's a time and a place for using bad midos, or if a person has various animalistic instincts, he can still channel those towards doing mitzvahs. Those are the two gists of the approaches, and either both are true, meaning that a person is a human being and he has human nature, but that doesn't mean that the human nature is necessarily evil or bad. It can be channeled also towards Avodas Hashem, and a person should work to channel everything he does and all the midos he has, etc., towards Avodas Hashem. So that's the drash in the first part, the mandate to be Ohev Hashem b'chol levavacha. Then it says, v'chol nafshecha, you have to serve Hashem with all of your nefesh, your soul. So the drash there is, afilu hu notel es nafshecha. Even in the event that a person is forced to dial Kiddush Hashem, for example, a person has to give up his life, then when that is the case, it's rare, but when that is the case, a person has to do it, and he has to do that with love. There's a very famous Gemara in Maseches Brachos Samach Aleph that talks about how Rabbi Akiva was martyred and killed by the Romans, and as he was dying, he was very happy, ostensibly, and saying Kriyat Shema on his death. And he was asked how in the world he'd be happy at a time of this, like this, when he was having his skin raked off of his body, obviously a nightmarish way to die. And he said that his whole life he had been waiting to fulfill this mandate to love Hashem b'chol nafshecha with all of one's soul, even when Hashem, afilu notos nafshecha, even when Hashem was taking his life, forcing him to die. In the case of Rabbi Akiva, he was dying against his will, but other times a person is forced to die, al-Kiddush Hashem, sort of submitting voluntarily to die. Whatever the case, and Rabbi Akiva explained there that when a person says the Echad of Kriyat Shema, he actually should ready himself. This is what on the Halacha, ready himself to Kiddush Hashem, be ready to do so. So here the mandate of the Mishnah is speaking out that the requirement to love Hashem b'chol nafshecha means to love Hashem even if it means dying for Hashem in those rare instances. And I should point out that the Mishnah doesn't say when you die, but it actually makes it much more poignant by pointing out afilu hu notolas nafshecha, even when Hashem takes your life, meaning we're not just pretending that bad things happen to good people. We're recognizing that whenever something bad happens, it's Hashem doing it also. So it's Hashem who's causing this person to die in it, even though it's Hashem doing the killing, so to speak, even if it's through an agent, the person should still respond to Hashem taking his life with love. What a formidable requirement. Be that as it may, that's what the Mishnah is saying here. And finally, v'chol me'odecha, to love Hashem with all your me'odecha. Now, me'od is an unusual word. If you're something me'od, it means you're very something. But here it says b'chol mamonecha. We understand me'odecha means all of your financial resources, your money. And davar acher, a second explanation of the word me'odecha, the unusual choice of words in the pasuk of me'odecha, is, now this is our proof text, we had said in the Mishnah, that you have to mevarach Hashem, bless Hashem on the ra'ah, on bad things that are happening, in the same way, meaning with the same sincerity and joy, as if you were saying on a good thing happening to you. So the source of that is this, the second davar acher, the second explanation of me'odecha. We're darshing it to be a reference to like the word mida, like a measuring cup, so to speak, meaning however Hashem dishes out to you life and whatever portion you get, you still have to respond to Him, whether it seems like it's a goodly portion or a not so desirable portion. Hashem knows what's good for you, and therefore you should respond to Him sincerely and with love and joy, regardless of how Hashem dishes out to you. And that's the drasha here. Davar acher, another way of understanding the word me'odecha, is b'chol mida umida, with whatever type of measurement Hashem dishes out to you, shu moded lecha, hevi moded lo b'ma'od ma'od, you should still thank Him very greatly. So, now, that's the end of that thought of the way one makes brachas, even a dina emes, is to be with sincerity and joy. Now, the Mishnah is going on to a new topic altogether. This topic seems to be almost unrelated to Maseches Brachos. Ostensibly, the reason why it's doing it is because the Mishnah didn't want to end on the sad notes of bad things happening. And also, whenever you see expressions of Avas Hashem, as was sort of the focal point here, the whole point in a way of the brachos throughout one's day and throughout one's life that one says, and the whole Maseches Brachos, is to engender Avas Hashem, a love of God. And of course, the Rambam, for example, puts the halachas of brachos and Sefer Ahava, the book of love, along with the halachas of Kriyashma, like we just mentioned before. But whenever Ahavas Hashem is brought into the picture, you will see that its counterbalance, its other side of that coin almost, is the mitzvah of Yiras Hashem, of being reverent to Hashem and being in awe of Hashem. Look, for example, how the Ramchal describes it, and look, for example, how the Rambam describes it in the beginning of the Mishnah Torah. You'll see that Avas Hashem and Yiras Hashem always come one on the heel of the other. So here the Mishnah is the same thing. And since we're talking about Avas Hashem, we will now bring in the mitzvah of Yiras Hashem, and specifically the place in where one most palpably expresses his Yiras Hashem, his fear of heaven, which would be when he encounters Hashem's home, kaviyachol, so to speak, in the Beis HaMikdash, in the temple precinct, where God's presence is actually manifest and almost it's palpable. It was when the Shekhinah was there. And therefore, the Mishnah now will talk about the proper way of expressing reverence towards Hashem in the context of the Beis HaMikdash and being in its vicinity. So the Mishnah says, Lo yakel adam es rosho keneged shar hamizrach. A person shouldn't be light-hearted. Literally means he shouldn't make his head light, but it means frivolous, do frivolous activities. Examples given are things like urinate and cut your fingernails and joke around. But I think conceptually it's the kind of thing where if you knew the videotape was rolling and you were going to be on the, 5 o'clock news and there'd be footage of you, there's certain things you just wouldn't do. Like, for example, clip your nails and joke around like a fool and urinate. So those kind of things that aren't serious, respectable things one shouldn't do, connected Shar HaMizrach, directly opposite the eastern gate. The Shaar HaMizrachi is referring to the outer gate on the eastern wall of the wall that surrounds the Temple Mount. That is to say, the Kotel is part of the retaining wall around the Temple Mount, but it's the western wall. So when one stands facing the Kotel Maravi, the western wall, he's actually facing east. So when you stand in the Jewish quarter, you're towards the Mikdash, you're facing east. But if you stand on the other side, meaning if you're standing on the Har HaZeisim, Mount of Olives, and you'd be facing the facing west, you'd be looking at the eastern wall. So we're talking about that eastern wall, and directly opposite the entrance to the Kadosh Kadashim, there was a series of gates. The outermost one, although they're all in alignment, is the Shaar HaMizrach, the outer eastern gate. And we're saying, even if you're outside of that gate, you're standing on Har HaZeisim, on the Mount of Olives, if you're directly in front of the gate, you may not be Kalos Rosh, be frivolous and messing about. The reason why is because Shehu Mechuvan Keneged Beis Kadosh HaKadoshim, that's in direct alignment with the Kadosh HaKadoshim, the Holy of Holies. And there are actually four separate portals that would be between the, let's call it the Aron inside the Kadosh HaKadoshim on the inside, and let's call it the Har HaZeisim, the mountain to the east, outside the temple precinct. So there are actually four separate portals. The outermost one is the Shaar HaMizrach we're talking about here. That's the eastern gate that brings you onto the Temple Mount. But then there'd be another gate that would lead you into the Esrus Nashim, the outer section of the courtyard of the temple, and another one that leads you into the Esrus Yisrael, the inner courtyard, the inner chatzer. And then finally, if you're inside the Azara in the inner courtyard, then there's another separate portal that leads you into the Heichal, into the building where the Kodesh and Kodesh Kodashim are. But all those gates and gateways are all in exact alignment. So when you're standing out on the Mount of Olives, if you're directly in front of the Shaar HaMizrach, you're really directly in front of all the way to the Kodesh Kodashim, and therefore these restrictions apply. And they apply as long as the Har HaBayis, the Temple Mount, is in view. That is called the Tzufim, the place where one can see, like as in Har HaTzofim, Mount Scopus, a place where you can sort of mitzapeh, you can see the Mikdash. If you're beyond that, you're farther east out of Jerusalem, then these requirements no longer kick in about not having Kalas Rosh. Now, the mission continues on. Another expression of Yiras Hashem is Lo Yikanes Lahar HaBayis B'Makelo Ubminalo Uvundaso Uva'avak Shal Raglav. You may not enter onto the Har HaBayis with your makel, your staff. The idea here is the staff is not like a little walking stick that helps you ambulate, but rather a sort of a symbol of, you know, dignity or importance. And one shouldn't have that one should come to Hashem with reverence and humility, and therefore not bring a staff with him. Manalo are shoes. Now, wearing shoes is actually not in any way disrespectful or somehow not showing proper reverence, but because the actual dirt, the floor, the ground in the Har HaBayis is kadosh, the same way when Moshe Rabbeinu had to take his shoes off when he stood before the Sneh, the burning bush, because as Hashem said, the ground on which you're standing is kadosh, so too the ground on which one stands when he goes onto the Har HaBayis is kadosh, and therefore one may not wear shoes, leather shoes, so he takes those off. Uvfundaso, there's two basic pshatim what a fundas is. Either it means like a money belt, so like you kind of think of maybe, you might think of like a fanny pack type thing, but probably a better, because that's what it was shaped like, if you will, like a money belt that travelers wear, like to hide their money in their around their waists, under their clothing, which is what was going on here. But the idea, the cultural significance is that that's sort of like coming on with like your, you know, attaché case, your briefcase onto the Har HaBayis, just inappropriate. Not a place for commerce, etc. Therefore, one shouldn't wear it. The other pshat, the Rambam understands that pundas is a like an undershirt. So the point is, you shouldn't walk on Har HaBayis not wearing a proper shirt, just having your undershirt. Their undershirts, especially, where they're sort of be like undergarments to collect sweat, and so they one shouldn't sweat through to his main clothes, which he doesn't change that often. So you're wearing just an undershirt. It's sort of disrespectful and gross, and therefore one may not do it on the Har HaBayis. Going to Rambam, the second shot on what a pundas is. Uva avak sh'al raglav. Nor can you walk on the Har HaBayis without having washed your feet, literally without with the dust on your feet. So when you take your shoes off, you must wash your feet out of respect. Veloya asenu kapandarya, a person may not make the harabayas a shortcut. That is to say, if one had to, for argument's sake, go from the Jewish quarter to in our modern day Jewish quarter on the one side of the harabayas to, let's say, the Mount of Olives on the other side, one couldn't cut through the harabayas. You'd have to go all the way around to get there. Urakika mekol v'chomer, and spitting on the floor in the harabayas, on the harabayas, is forbidden from a kol v'chomer. You know, all the you know, the kol v'chomer is, you know, arguments from all the more so, meaning that if you can't do things like wear shoes, which is not objectively disrespectful, you certainly can't spit, which is an expression of contempt. Now, the Mishnah has a new point here. The new point here is the way in which one said brachos on the harabayas in the temple was different than elsewhere. The Mishnah says, kol chos me brachos, the way every blessing ended, shayba mikdash, when they would say blessings in the base of mikdash, hayomrim min ha'olam, they would add the words min ha'olam, which means literally from the world, which means that when they said a bracha, they would say, for example, for the bracha, let's say, of chonin hada'as in Shemon Esrei, they wouldn't say, baruch ata Hashem chonin hada'as, they would say, baruch ata Hashem Elokei Yisrael, min ha'olam, from the world, chonin hada'as. Those extra words, Elokei Yisrael, are added also in, but the Mishnah doesn't focus on them. But now, the problem is, says the Mishnah, Mishakilklu haminim, once the minin, the heretics, were mekalkel, they, you know, caused their mischief, and they argued, va'amru, they said, ein olam ele echad. They said, there is no world to come, there's just this one world, and they brought a proof to that heretical thought by saying, listen, even in the temple, they say, min ha'olam, from the world, Hashem gets praise, meaning there's only this world, no other world. Hiskinu, the rabbis made a takana, they rectified the matter. Shiyu omrin, that the way they would say the blessings should be, not just Baruch Ata Hashem Elokei Yisrael Min HaOlam, but they would say Min HaOlam, from the world, Va'ad HaOlam, and to the world. It's hard to translate quite in English, the nuance here. But in any case, just literally it means we have both from and to the world, as if you have two separate Olamot, two separate worlds, a reference both to this world and the next world. Fine. The Mishnah continues on with one final point. Another Takana Chazal made. We're ending on this point. I'll explain why I think in a minute. In any case, a new unrelated point here that Hiskinu, the rabbis, made the following Takana. Shiyehe Adam Shol Es Shalom Chavero B'Shem. That a person should greet his fellow Jew by invoking the name of God. We actually fulfill this by saying something like Shalom Aleichem, because Shalom is one of Hashem's names. So when we say peace upon you, we're sort of invoking Hashem's name. But the Mishnah here doesn't mean that. The Mishnah here means actually to even invoke Hashem's good old, you know, Shem Adnos, Yudke Vavke, to invoke that name. Shne'emar, how do you know that you are even allowed to do that, let alone that we do it? Shne'emar, because the verse says, V'hine Boaz ba mi beit lechem. Boaz, this is famous from the story of Rus. Boaz came from Beis Lechem, Bethlehem, B'yomer lekotzrim, and he said to the people harvesting, Hashem imachem. He greeted them by saying, God is with you. So when he invoked God's name as a greeting to them, V'yomer lo, yivarech Hashem, and they responded in kind. So the proof here is that, you see, Boaz, who was the God of the door, invoked Hashem's name to greet people. So you see, it's a legitimate thing to do, meaning Boaz did it. After that, it wasn't the regular thing to do, but using that as a precedence, later on, the rabbis decided that in order to promote brotherly love, fraternity between fellow Jews, the rabbis instituted that one should greet a fellow Jew by invoking the name of God. Now, if you're not sure that that's a legitimate thing to do, the Mishnah says it is, and the precedent that you see it's legitimate is Boaz did it. Now, the Mishnah has got an unspoken question here. Perhaps you would ask, you know, maybe Boaz did it and it wasn't the right thing to do. So to address that, it will suggest another proof text temporarily, and that is Va'omer. Another verse says, this is a pasuk from Shoftim, when an angel greets Gidon. And the angel says to Gidon, Hashem imcha gibor achayil. God is with you, great warrior. And the understanding here is that the angel is greeting Gidon by invoking Hashem's name, and you see that's a proper way to greet someone with God's name. The problem with that proof text, of course, is manifold. one problem is, who says the rules that govern angels governs human beings? And if, even if you say, well, listen, angels wouldn't do things that are wrong, they're angels, still it could be that the angel isn't greeting Gideon, but rather saying a statement of fact. He's declaring you should go into war confidently because God is with you, not a greeting. And therefore, we lapse back into the proof text we had before, which is the one from Boaz. And if you're still worried about, well, maybe Boaz acted without proper license and he invoked God's name in greeting the coats from the harvesters, but that was inappropriate. Va'omer, the Mishnah says, don't say that. Bring the pasuk from Mishlei, Proverbs, Al tavuz ki zakna imecha. Don't disgrace your mother just because she's old. Meaning, our ancestors, our forebears, like Boaz, you can rely upon them. And what they did were legitimate precedents. And to say that maybe Boaz made a mistake and what he did was inappropriate and we can't rely on him as a precedent, that's really being disrespectful to Boaz, who was really one of an important link in the chain of the Masorah. So to even suggest that is unfounded and improper, and therefore we can rely upon a Boaz to do it. Now, if you'd say, well, listen, still, there's a general prohibition against taking God's name in vain for nothing, so why in the world would you sort of invoke God's name casually to greet a fellow Jew? Well, you see there are precedents elsewhere that fostering peace between fellow Jews is no small matter. And in fact, the presence of the precedent of the sota and the permission to actually rub out, you know, blot out God's written name in order to foster peace between a husband and wife, which is a heavy-duty precedent because erasing God's name is even a more severe prohibition. Yet God does it and allows it to happen for the sake of fostering peace. So you see God has an interest in there being peaceful relations between fellow Jews, and is prepared to forego on his kavod for that end. And therefore, the Mishnah concludes by saying, "Va'omer, you should know, as the pasuk in Tehillim says, 'Eis la'asos la'shem heferu sarasecha.'" Now, the meaning of this pasuk literally is, "Eis la'asos la'shem." There's a time to act for God, heferu sarasecha, in response to the fact that the bad guys have annulled his Torah, so you have to take action. But we're making a drasha here. The drasha is that Reb Nassan Omer, Heferu Sarasecha, the good guys, the chazal, the rabbis, took the liberty of annulling a clause in the Torah, meaning they were liberal in invoking God's name, Eis Lasos Lashem, because sometimes you have to act for God, and extraordinary situations require extraordinary measures, and that's why the rabbis did it. Now, 2 points that I want to make before we end here. The first point is certainly one can't wield the rule of Eis La'asos La'Shem for himself and decide to take matters in his own hands and have, you know, extraordinary rule breaking of the Torah. Certainly we're not doing that. That would require the Chazal Sanhedrin to do something of that nature. And we're not talking about that. A second point is conjectural on my part. I can't remember seeing this inside anywhere, but I probably did. So if it's right, I take no credit for it. If it's wrong, I take responsibility. I want to suggest here that the Mishnah ends this way, besides for the bringing in the point of fostering shalom, peace, because that's a theme that ends many masechtas and has many other segments of the Torah and themes of the Torah. Peace is, of course, a primary concern and a primary value in Jewish thinking, and therefore ending on that happy note of fostering peace. But I want to suggest here also that it weighed heavily on Rebbe Yehuda Nasi's heart, having now authored the first Masechta of the Mishnah, that he'd done something ostensibly wrong in writing down the Torah Shebaal Peh, which has to remain oral, and yet he wrote it down. And he did it. Why did he do it? So the Gemara says he didn't want to do it, but he had to do it because the alternative was the persecution that the Jews are suffering under the Romans would return and the Torah would be lost. And therefore, he again, Eis La'asos La'Shem, he had to act for the sake of Hashem because Heferu Sarasecha, because other people were seeking to annul the Torah, and therefore, pulling this out, he, the Chazal, Rabbi Yehuda Nasi, and his Bezdin, acted to be made for the Torah, to breaking the rule of the Torah of not writing the Torah Shebaal Peh down, because Eis La'asos La'Shem, because sometimes you have to act for God. And with that, Salak Maseches Brachas, we end Maseches Brachas. Bez Hashem, we will come back to it as a Chazara soon.